This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Last Sunday night, just a couple of nights ago, just before the deadline for vetoes, Governor Greg Abbott voided SB 3. That's the THC ban. And it was passed by the legislature, but then it was dead. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick was not happy about that, to say the least. He blasted Abbott for what he called flawed reasoning and flimsy excuses and using the veto power on his bill. The two Republicans are normally really close allies, but not on this issue. Abbott is calling for a special session now to regulate THC products, but Patrick says he will not gavel the Texas Senate on anything but a full THC ban. We're joined by Scott Braddock, the editor of the Quorum Report and co-host of the Texas Take podcast, political podcast, one of the best in the state, to help break this all down. And Scott, welcome back.
Always great to be with you, David.
So that was some press conference yesterday Dan yeah. Patrick had. Never seen anything like that before, but from him. Of course, he's frequently having, you know, meltdowns like that, but not directed at the governor. So what happens now?
You know, after listening to Patrick's doddering old man, a sort of geriatric scolding of everybody, this is the way we were putting it at quorumreport.com today, it's actually hard for me to tell what's going to happen. We're going to have a special session that's, you know, slated for later in the month to get underway, and this is going to be one of the topics that will be addressed. But during that news conference, as much as Patrick blasted the governor and said that the governor acted in bad faith, that the governor didn't act honestly about this, he acted as if the governor was doing something underhanded by issuing the veto at essentially the last minute, at the 11th hour, 11:30 on Sunday night or so. But after saying all of that, Patrick did say that there still is, in that same press conference, he did say that there is a chance that the governor's version of this might still pass the Texas Senate during a special session this year. Patrick said that, if there are enough senators who support what the governor's talking about, which is regulation of this THC, the THC products that are out there being sold now in Texas, Patrick said if there's enough support, it might pass. So I don't know if there's some acknowledgement by the lieutenant governor, because, again, it was a pretty rambling statement to press conference that he had. But if there may be some acknowledgement from him that he's basically beaten on this issue, then it may be that we do see some kind of a more stringent regulatory scheme for the THC that's being sold in Texas. And important to understand where this came from in the first place, David. I mean, the legislature passed a law a few years back that allowed for this, and that's in conjunction with the Farm Bill that was signed by President Trump. And Patrick, in so many ways, is out of step with the base of the Republican Party. And I haven't seen him this way before. Well, you mentioned that we hadn't seen anything quite like this with him. I think what we really haven't seen is a situation where, on a high-profile issue, Patrick is completely out of step with the base of the Republican Party, which, over the years, I've come to think of Patrick as almost the spiritual leader of the Republican Party in Texas, where he says to go, they go. But that's because he follows the polling. It's not really that they're following him. He's following the voters most of the time. He is very responsive to polling. We had reported earlier this year at quorumreport.com that his own pollster, a guy named Mike Basilis, who is based in Austin, had found that Republican voters in Texas are completely against what Patrick is trying to do. 57% of GOP voters want to see THC essentially regulated the way that alcohol is regulated in Texas. And it was only about 28% of GOP voters thought that there should be a full ban on THC products, which is what Patrick has been pushing. So it may be that he's been beaten on this, that he's outflanked, but we'll see what happens in a special session.
Well, many Republican voters were not in favor of the school voucher program, and they pushed that through. It may not even matter what voters want anymore. It's really about what special interests want. And so Patrick may not be following the voters, the will of the voters, or even the Republican voters, but he is following the money, isn't he?
Well, so on the voucher issue, it's a good point you're making. On the voucher issue, Republican voters do agree with the overall idea of quote-unquote school choice, right? You and I have talked about this before. The polling on that and the ballot question that was put to Republican voters in the last couple of election cycles shows that Republican voters do agree with the idea of school choice, even if it's kept sort of, especially if it's kept kind of vague from them. They just, they like the idea. I mean,
yeah, the words sound good.
That's
yeah.
right. 75 to 80% of Republican voters agree with the overall idea. To your point, you know, the idea of taking money away from public schools to pay for subsidizing rich people's private education for their kids, that's what people don't have. That's what people don't like.
And that's what we ended up with. That's what we have. So, yeah.
That's correct. So that's right. So on this, so I think on that issue, voters are sort of hoodwinked. On this, with THC, it's a lot more straightforward. You know, it's a product that people are using, you know, currently in Texas. So you know, these products that have been, you know, made legal under these various laws that I mentioned that were passed. And it's interesting that this is an issue, unlike school vouchers, that has really broken through with the general population. You know, when I'm going around Texas, I might sit down at a restaurant or a bar somewhere. I might be in the liquor store. I've told this story on the Texas Take podcast. I was in the liquor store in my neighborhood a few weeks ago, you know, there to just buy the stuff for martinis or whatever else. And there were three people in front of me. David, the only thing, the three people in the checkout, you know, ahead of me, they were all buying THC drinks. And they were talking about this issue and the idea that it's about to be banned. And without me saying anything, they were saying that, you know, Dan Patrick is the guy who's trying to take away something that they enjoy. And so it's broken through with, you know, with the larger population, not just people who, you know, are usually interested in politics. And so I do think that not only is Patrick on the wrong side of the Republican base, he's on the wrong side of the population at large. Now, you do know that within the industry, the hemp industry, they believe that there does need to be, industry leaders do believe there needs to be some kind of regulation that is put in place to, you know, better handle what's happening already, which is you do have this proliferation of these hemp products everywhere, hemp-derived THC. But of course, as you mentioned, with the special interests, the lobby effort on this is pretty incredible. You think about the fact that the liquor and alcohol industry is divided about it. The liquor stores like being able to sell the THC drinks, but the beer distributors don't like the THC drinks because they're not the ones who move the THC drinks. They don't get paid anything for the THC drinks. So usually the alcohol industry would all be on the same page. On this, they're divided. Then you have the divide, you know, among those who actually produce THC products. So, you know, the medical marijuana folks, the people who are, you know, running those businesses that are involved in the compassionate use program, you know, which allows for people with certain conditions to have access to medical marijuana in Texas, they were pushing for the governor to veto, Senate Bill 3 go into effect, because the medical marijuana folks want to continue to be able to make the money that they're making through the medical marijuana program, and not see competition from the hemp-derived THC, which is just much cheaper for people. I mean, I've heard the stories, and you have too, I'm sure, from a lot of people, both in the cities and in rural Texas, a lot of folks who may not have health insurance but do suffer from certain conditions and can benefit from the effects of THC. And if you have to go through the medical, you know, the medical program where, you know, where treatment, a dosage might cost as much as $500, versus going to the liquor store and buying a couple of cans of THC drink that costs $14 or $15, you can see real fast how that impacts people's bottom line.
Yeah, Patrick made that point himself in the press conference yesterday, saying why would anyone go through the TCUP, the Texas Compassionate Use Program, right, when they can just go buy this stuff at the corner store? And right, I'm saying, yeah, exactly, man. That's
right,
what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because they need pain relief or whatever else they get from this project, from this
yeah,
product.
But yeah, there's that. And then there's also this speaks to the way Democrats, independents, and a lot of Republicans feel about this. There's also just the question of personal liberty and personal freedom, people being able to do whatever they want. There are those folks who do use it for medicinal reasons because they may suffer from some, you know, some joint pains, you know, pain in their hands. I was talking to an older gentleman who's in his 70s who still does construction work up in North Texas, and his hands hurt, and the THC products help with that. He's not trying to get high off of it or, you know, have that sort of euphoric effect from it. But there are those who do, and they do it responsibly, the same way that a lot of people do with alcohol. I mean, if you look at the demographics of the people who are using this stuff, in a lot of cases, it's not what folks think. There are those who might think, oh, it's just somebody who's, you know, hippie from the 60s, trying to get high, whatever, in the tie-dye shirt and all that. But a lot of it, David, is it's soccer moms in the suburbs who, you know, they put their kids to bed at night. They may have one of these THC drinks. They feel great. They go to sleep. They wake up. They have no hangover in the morning, and they take the kids to school, and it's all fine. You know, and so those folks who, you know, have enjoyed that aspect of it are getting pretty upset at the fact that the government's now going to take something away, potentially, you know, that they have really, you know, come to enjoy.
Well, they're going into a special session. I guess that means that the the lobbyists will continue their donations to these politicians, trying to make sure they get bills that will help them continue their profit margin. But our phone lines are open. We do want to see what listeners have to say. What kind of regulation would you like to see with THC? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Should it be 18, 21, 25? Should they really clamp down on licensing so this is, should not be available at the corner store, only, you know, like a liquor store type of a situation where something that is definitely licensed, really lock this down, trying to keep this out of the hands of the kids and just trying to make sure that there is responsible use. I mean, is all that possible? What do we want to see with this? And also, when we come back, if we have time for it, Scott, I want to ask you, you know, will they try to slip in into the special session something about a redistricting to have some gerrymandering Texas to even get some more Republican seats out of? That's been reported. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll get some callers on the air. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Be back.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Public media is facing one of the most serious threats in its history. The House has voted to eliminate $1.1 billion in funding, putting trusted news, meaningful storytelling, and emergency alerts at risk. The Senate votes next, and you can contact your senators every day until they do. Tell them to reject these cuts and protect TPR. Visit tpr.org/resiliency to take action today.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line, Scott Braddock. He's the editor of thequorumreport.com, one of the best sources to find out what's really going on in Texas politics. And he's also the co-host of the Texas Take Political podcast to help us figure out what is going on in Austin with this THC ban and then the veto. So if this thing is so unpopular with Texas voters, and we can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255. If this thing was so unpopular, how did it pass so easily?
Well, it didn't pass easily, but it did pass with a lot of votes. So let me explain what I mean. The lieutenant governor, and I would give him a lot of credit on this for being a really good political operator and someone who, in his decade in this office, has really figured out where all the levers of power are and how to, you know, push and pull them at the right time. David, really fascinating to watch this. I was on the floor of the Texas House as this was being debated. And remember, there were two competing proposals. The Senate, with Dan Patrick as its leader, had voted for the full ban on THC. That's what he's pushing. But the House had put forward a proposal by a representative from the Panhandle, Representative Ken King, who is the State Affairs Committee chairman. And essentially, the proposal in the House was to regulate THC in a similar fashion to the way alcohol is regulated in this state. But there was a push at the last minute in the House to change their proposal to the full ban that Patrick wanted. And what Patrick did, and this is what I mean by him being masterful, not only was he, you know, putting out these social media messages, you saw the videos on his Twitter feed, et cetera, where he was, you know, constantly talking about trying to protect children from what he called poison THC, that these companies, and he accuses them of working with terrorists and cartels to try to hook kids on THC. No evidence for any of that, by the way, is what he's saying. That was sort of the air war that he was doing. But underneath the surface, the lieutenant governor was exercising his power as the leader of the Senate. He was threatening to kill unrelated proposals by Texas House members if they didn't vote for his ban on THC. And here's how far he took it. This is my reporting on the day of the vote. He was recruiting lobbyists who he knew had good relationships with certain House members, and having those lobbyists call Texas House members to text them and call them in real time during the debate, and have those lobbyists tell those members of the House that if they would vote yes on his ban on THC, the outright ban, then he would have meetings with them about their legislation, unrelated legislation that had stalled out in the Texas Senate. So he was leveraging every bit of his power to make this happen. And so he's right in the press conference when he says that out of 181 members of the Texas legislature, there were more than 100 who voted for it in the House and Senate. But it's not necessarily because they were in favor of this. It's because they were being pressured about other things, which he was able to do from his position of power.
So some political arm twisting.
Absolutely.
So,
and in fact, in that moment, I'll add this. In that moment, I was talking to some conservative Republican House members who had said, privately had said they didn't agree with what was being proposed. In fact, one of them, I remember, on that evening of the vote, said to me that it was a taking of the business of these folks who have started to sell these legal THC products around the state and really didn't agree with it. But at the same time, this Republican member of the House was saying that he had proposals that were stalled out in the Texas Senate, which are very important to his community. And so, to your point, arm twisting on another level to get this done.
Dislocating. Let's go to Johnny.
Yes, that's right.
Just go to Johnny. Hey, Johnny, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, David. Thanks for taking my call. I have a concern with the many THC stores that are all around San Antonio. They're about a dime a dozen, especially on, your beloved West Side. There's at least two that I pass by every morning, and they're open 24 hours. They have people just coming and going, coming and going. And I think it's just unsightly. The city doesn't need more coping mechanisms for people of low economics. That's what these stores are. You can buy a little bit of THC weed for $5, and people go in there every day, every hour at the grassy one. And at the bus stops in the morning, just smells like weed. The buses smell like weed. The bus drivers don't really know how to react to it. They just let it happen, And I think there's also stuff inside these stores called kratom, which is supposed to be like a pain relief from Southeast Asia. It's got addicting properties to it. And that's just sold willy-nilly at the gas station. These stores are a little bit unsightly. Sorry for talking too much, David. Thank you for your time.
Well, thanks for calling in, Johnny. I think that's good reporting. Thank you for that. So what would the regulation do to what Johnny is observing?
Well, these are the kind of things that are being discussed at the Capitol, and the kind of thing that was hopefully going to be addressed by the proposal as it had been laid out in the House before it was shifted into this full ban. And I think to the concern that's raised there, there are legitimate concerns about where some of these shops are, some of the things that they're selling, the hours in which they're selling these things. But I think those concerns were kind of swept to the side in this push to instead have a full ban on this and say you just can't sell it anywhere. One of the things that was brought up repeatedly during the Texas House hearing about this was the black market that is created for these products when you make them completely illegal. And so to the concern that's raised there, it's my understanding that for a lot of it, it would be that much worse to have a full ban, because you're then shifting it to, the situation where you can't even get it at a store anymore, and you're getting it from essentially from a drug dealer out on the streets. And so the discussion at the Capitol, I think when it was being had in a more rational way before the lieutenant governor ratcheted it all the way up to we're doing a full ban on this thing and going full bore on it, there was more of a nuanced discussion about how to address those kinds of concerns, which are certainly valid.
About 5 minutes left here. I want to ask you about this possibility of a mid-decade redistricting. The Trump administration is calling for this in order to really squeeze Republican seats out of Texas. This could create seats that have thinner Republican majorities, and it would hurt maybe some congressmen if in a bad year, and maybe it'll be a bad year for them in this midterm election. But what is the mood? What does it look like? Will there be a special session to redistrict Texas?
I've been having a lot of conversations about this with Republican members of the Texas legislature and our Republican congressmen and women from Texas. And as you know, it's been reported that the Texas GOP congressional delegation has met at least twice about this in Washington. And it's my understanding through those conversations that the Trump administration really does want this, that the Trump White House is convinced that Texas is such a Republican bastion, such a Republican place, that there should be more Republican representation from Texas. And so the legislature should redraw the lines to try to make some of these districts around the state more competitive so that Republicans can potentially win some of those seats or hold on to some of those seats next year. The real motivation for this, to cut right to it, is that President Trump doesn't want to get impeached again. And as soon as Democrats take the gavels in Washington, if that happens, if they have a good election year next year, then it's basically the understanding of most folks there that the first thing that Speaker Jeffries, if he's the guy, if Speaker Hakeem Jeffries takes the gavel, one of the first things he'll do is order impeachment proceedings against Trump once again. And so Trump tried to avoid that, trying to get more Republicans in Congress. And right now, Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives are passing some of their proposals by, as narrow a majority as one or two votes. And so they need to find Republican votes wherever they can. They're convinced they can do it here in Texas. And there may be some push on this in some other states as well. Wisconsin and Florida, I think, are some of the places they're taking a look at doing this. Ohio, trying to find some more Republican seats. But as you point out, it may be tough for them anyway. This would be the second midterm of President Trump. You remember that in his first midterm, going back to 2018, six, 7 years ago, that was a pretty good year for Democrats in Texas.
I mean, it's the presidential midterm curse. Whoever's the party in power in the White House, the midterm is going to be bad.
That's right. And historically, it's traditionally even worse for the president who's the incumbent in their second midterm. So in 2018, Democrats in Texas had a pretty good year. They had historic gains in the Texas legislature. There were 12 new Democrats in the Texas House and 2 new Democrats in the Texas Senate. And you remember that's the same year that 2 congressional seats in Houston and Dallas flipped from Republican to Democratic. That's Representative Colin Allred in Dallas, who's retired now after his Senate race, and Congresswoman Lizzie Fletcher in Houston. So this is raw politics. And I do expect, based on a lot of conversations, that some version of this will be attempted. It just depends on how greedy the Republicans get. I think they could make some changes to districts in South Texas, going down to the border and up towards San Antonio, where maybe they could pick up one or 2 seats. But if Republicans start trying to redraw lines in place in the big urban centers in Houston and Dallas-Fort Worth as the biggest examples, if they try to do that, then to your point earlier, they may end up changing the lines in such a way. And this was from a solid Republican source who said this, David. They were telling me that redrawing those lines, changing up those districts, could endanger as many as 6 to 10 incumbent Republican members of Texas right now. So this is a big gamble on the part of President Trump and his administration and Republican leadership. But sometimes you take a big gamble when you're desperate.
Really quick now, we're almost out of time, but I want to reinforce the thing about South Texas. I've heard that too. So really trying to make South Texas redder with these congressional lines. Do you think that's the plan?
That seems to be where they'll start, yeah.
Scott Braddock, thank you so much. He is the editor of thequorumreport.com. Go there, subscribe. You can really get the insight on what's happening in Texas politics. Co-host of the Texas Take Political podcast. Thank you so much, Scott.
Thanks, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Adios. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation. Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.